Hello there. It is Tuesday, Monday, April 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, more than 200 dead in Easter blasts on Sri Lankan churches and hotels. The Pope issues a plea for peace on Easter Sunday, and the debate continues over evidence in the special counsel's report.
It's certainly the case that an impeachment would be unsuccessful if the Republican Party continues to place a party above country, continues essentially to back the president no matter how unethical or dishonest his conduct may be.
Also ahead, our piece of rock and roll history gets sold for big bucks. It's all on today's International Edition. But we start with tragedy in Sri Lanka, the deadliest violence there in a decade. Multiple explosions ripped through churches and luxury hotels on Easter Sunday, leaving more than 200 people dead and more than 400 others wounded. Sri Lanka has imposed a curfew effective immediately and blocked access to major social media and messaging apps to prevent the spread of misinformation and rumors in the wake of the blasts. Marcus Harton brings us this report from Anjana Parishka in New Delhi.
The first six blasts that began around 8:45 local time were coordinated and claimed most of the fatalities, while two smaller blasts took place several hours later. The capital, Colombo, where three major hotels and one church were targeted, bore the brunt of the mayhem. Christian groups have said they face increasing intimidation from hardline Buddhist monks in recent years. However, such harassment is on a relatively minor level, says Jahan Pereira, who heads the National Peace Council in Colombo.
Who target Catholics? There have been anti-Christian sentiment, but it's on a very small scale with regard to these little conversions that are happening in different localities, but not to the extent where people were being killed.
Condemnation of the deadly bombings came in from leaders across the world, including U.S. President Donald Trump. For reporter Anjana Pasricha, this is Marcus Harton, VOA News, Washington.
Pope Francis expressed closeness to the Christian community struck by the attacks in Sri Lanka on Easter Day. In his Easter message, he also prayed for peace in Syria, Yemen, Libya, and South Sudan. Addressing tens of thousands of pilgrims gathered in St. Peter's Square from the central balcony of the Basilica, the Pope said the resurrection of Christ is the principle of new life for every man and woman. Sabina Castelfranco has more for VOA.
Under grey skies, but in a St. Peter's Square filled with flowers, Pope Francis, dressed in white vestments, celebrated Easter Mass in front of tens of thousands of faithful and tourists. At the end of the Mass, the Pope gave his traditional message and blessing to the city and to the world. His last words before he wished everyone a happy Easter were for the people of Sri Lanka, struck, he said, by the serious attacks on Easter Day, which brought mourning and pain in some of the churches and other sites in the country. He said he learned the news with sadness and expressed closeness to the Christian community gathered in prayer. Earlier in his message, the Pope said, "The resurrection of Christ is the principle of new life for every man and every woman, for true renewal always begins from the heart, from the conscience." Yet Easter, the Pope added, is also the beginning of the new world set free from the slavery of sin and death. The Pope's first thoughts went to the people of Syria, victims of an ongoing conflict to which we risk becoming ever more resigned and even indifferent. He urged a new commitment for a political solution that will respond for the hopes for peace and confront the humanitarian crisis. The Pope's thoughts also turned to the people of Yemen, especially the children, exhausted by hunger and war, and to the situation in Libya.
Le armi cessino di insanguinare la Libia.
The Pope said, "May conflict and bloodshed cease in Libya, where defenseless people are once more dying in recent weeks and many families have been forced to abandon their homes. Pope Francis urged the parties involved to choose dialogue over force and to avoid reopening wounds left by a decade of conflicts and political instability. The Pope also prayed for peace in other parts of the African continent, which he said is still rife with social tensions, conflicts, and at times violent forms of extremism that leave in their wake insecurity, destruction, and death. He mentioned Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, Nigeria, and Cameroon, but he also spoke of Sudan, which he said is presently experiencing a moment of political uncertainty.
Possa aprirsi una nuova pagina della storia del paese, nella quale tutte le componenti politiche.
Referring to the recent spiritual retreat held with South Sudanese leaders in the Vatican, the Pope expressed the hope for a new page open in the history of that country, in which all political, social, and religious components actively commit themselves to the pursuit of the common good and the reconciliation of the nation. The Pope also mentioned the crisis in Venezuela and the situation in Nicaragua, where he expressed hope for a peaceful, negotiated solution.
Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. The U.S. plans to sanction nations for importing Iranian oil. On Easter, the Pope calls for peace in Syria, Yemen, Libya, and South Sudan. A 41-year-old television actor wins a landslide victory in the Ukrainian presidential election Sunday. And officials say the Taliban and ISIS are depriving Afghan kids of polio vaccine. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. President Trump's lawyer Rudy Giuliani insisted Sunday there was nothing wrong with the president's 2016 campaign taking information from the Russians, as House Democrats pledged stepped-up investigations into campaign misconduct and possible crimes of obstruction detailed in Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report. Giuliani called the Trump campaign's effort to get political help from representatives of the Russian government possibly ill-advised, but not illegal. The Sunday shows offered the latest back-and-forth following the long-anticipated release of Mueller's 448-page redacted report Thursday from his two-year investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. AP correspondent Shelley Adler has that.
As President Trump was heading to Easter services in Florida, tweeting the Mueller report was, quote, nothing but a total hit job, White House Counselor Kellyanne Conway took to the airways.
This has been a frustrated president about an ill-conceived, illegitimate investigation from the beginning.
Not so fast, says Congressman Elijah Cummings, who chairs the House Oversight Committee. He says the Mueller report is a roadmap for further action by Congress.
I think he basically said to us as a Congress, it's up to you to take this further with regard to obstruction and other matters that might come up.
While Cummings was on CBS's Face the Nation, Conway appeared on ABC's This Week. Shelley Adler, Washington.
Meanwhile, there's been Democratic leaders are angered by what they say are efforts by U.S. Attorney General William Barr to protect the president by what they say is mischaracterization of the conclusions about the special counsel's report. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi both released a joint statement Thursday saying that the differences between Barr's analysis and the Mueller report are stark. Earlier, I talked about it with former federal prosecutor Kenneth McCallion about the report and the attorney general's handling of its release. And so thank you for taking the time to talk to us. What is your take on the Attorney General's portrayal of the report?
Now that we've seen the Mueller report, our suspicions are confirmed. He said that Mueller had reached a conclusion that there was no conspiracy. However, as Barr somewhat telegraphed in the letter, and as we now see in the Mueller report, the definition of what the conspiracy was extremely narrowly limited to the hacking and original original dissemination by the Russian intelligence GRU and the IRA, the Internet Research Agency of the Russians. And there was never any suspicion or inkling that Trump or anyone in his campaign actually participated in the hacking or the release by Guccifer 2.0, DC leaks or WikiLeaks of those hacked and stolen materials. So it's really quite puzzling, really, why Mueller, who gave us a mountain of evidence in there, which comports about 98% with what the publicly available information was. Well, the information is in there, and the multiple contacts with the Russians is there. Mueller, for whatever reasons, and Barr chose to define the possible conspiracy in a very narrow fashion, where the answer would necessarily be no, they did not conspire because they did not hack or originally disseminate the stolen materials.
What about the way that it has been portrayed to the public by the Attorney General of the United States in general, from the four-page letter until his press conference ahead of the report to give his summation and his disagreement with some of what Mueller's findings were?
Really extraordinary and extremely disconcerting and disappointing. He's really not acting like an independent Attorney General or the chief attorney for the public. He's acting as Trump's really private lawyer, putting a massive spin on it.
And so now that it has been released, what is your main takeaway?
The main takeaway from the Mueller report is that he did not reach a decision on obstruction of justice. It appears that his intention was that since DOJ regs prevent the Justice Department from indicting a sitting president, basically Mueller punted on making a decision. He felt he didn't have to make a decision, or could not make a decision that would exonerate the president. And in addition, I think the Mueller report provides a great deal of detail, but it's largely detail that's about 95% is already in the public record based on excellent reporting and investigative reporting over the last few years. We did get some additional tidbits of information which might be helpful, but the massive amount of evidence of the interaction between the Trump campaign and the Russians and their concerted desire of Trump and his campaign to get advanced knowledge of the WikiLeaks material, for example, and any other illegally obtained dirt on Hillary Clinton in excruciating detail, really supports a conclusion, in my view, that Trump and his team were aiding and abetting and providing aid and comfort to a hostile foreign power, which is a classic textbook definition and constitutional definition of treason. So it was not addressed in the Mueller report. He was looking for a very narrow participation by the Trump team in conspiracy or obstruction of justice, which he took a pass on. But if you look at all that evidence in a different lens, was the Trump and his team really providing aid and comfort to the detriment of the United States, to a foreign hostile power that was tipping the scales of the 2006 election towards Trump? The answer overwhelmingly is yes. There was really a fundamental betrayal by Trump and his team of the best interests of the United States and certainly the integrity of our electoral processes. So if you look at it through that lens, I think Congress has a lot of work to do in parsing this out, filling in the gaps, and the final chapter of the Trump-Russia investigation saga is definitely not over.
All right. Well, we appreciate your perspective. Former federal prosecutor Kenneth McCallion, he's also the author of the new book, Treason and Betrayal. Meanwhile, House Judiciary Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler issued a subpoena Friday to get the full Mueller report.
This is Science in a Minute.
Until the stars began to form, the only atoms in the early universe were mostly of hydrogen, some helium, and trace amounts of lithium and beryllium. Scientists theorize that about 100,000 years after the Big Bang, elements of helium and hydrogen atoms formed the first molecule in the universe, helium hydride. While many think the molecule should exist in parts of our universe, it was never detected until recently. In a new study published in the journal Nature, scientists say they were able to detect the signature of the first molecule in the universe in a planetary nebula 3,000 light-years away near the constellation Cygnus. The discovery was made by the scientists who used sophisticated instruments that were aboard NASA's Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy, or SOFIA, the world's largest airborne observatory. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Well, France is spearheading a new higher education plan aimed to make it a more attractive destination for foreign students, but also a more expensive one. The move to raise tuition fees for foreign students has sparked protests, especially on the part of African students who make up nearly half the country's international student body. From the Paris suburb of Crete, Lisa Bryant reports that some universities are also rebelling against the tuition hike.
In many ways, the University of Paris-Est-Créte, or UPEC, is the face of today's France and of France's reputation abroad. Nearly 10% of its student body is international. So it's no surprise its administration has been closely tracking the government's new higher education plan. Dubbed Welcome to France, the strategy aims to boost foreign student numbers from about 300,000 to 500,000 by 2027. UPEC supports many aspects of the plan except one, a sharp tuition hike next academic year.
Une grande partie de notre public international vient de zones d'Afrique.
Laurent Thévenet is UPEC's vice president for international relations. He says a large part of its international student body comes from North and Sub-Saharan Africa. They can't afford a tuition increase. Even with the tuition increase, French fees are much lower than elsewhere in the West. But the move has still sparked demonstrations. And like a number of other French universities, UPEC has opted not to raise costs for foreign students. Even so, some like Nanto Ralibera, a graduate student from Madagascar, are worried. Ralibera said he was shocked to hear about the tuition hike, which would have amounted to about 15 times more than what he pays now. It's not part of the budget of students like himself when they left their countries. Katerina Vukovic from Serbia is also on a tight budget.
I definitely have the impression that the strategy, that part of the strategy of the French government, will not contribute to the attraction as they want.
Vukovic says she's happy about the quality of education here, but she says Serbian students like herself may not be able to afford to study in France if tuition costs are raised. France is the world's top non-Anglophone destination for foreign students and fourth overall. It's home to the iconic Sorbonne University and prestigious business schools. A big draw is also the country's inexpensive tuition. Still, France has been losing ground in recent years.
We are competitive. We are very competitive. The problem is we receive a lot of students, but maybe we don't receive them very well.
Olivier Rollot is a French journalist specializing in higher education.
When you come here from all over the world, you expect to live like in America, you see, in big universities, campus. In France, it's not like that. So maybe the students are a bit disappointed.
The government plan aims to tackle some of the hurdles by simplifying student visas, offering better housing, and more French language classes. It also aims to expand France's educational presence in Africa. Experts say the country's higher education strategy serves larger goals by expanding French influence and interests abroad. Over the decades, presidents and business leaders, especially from France's former African colonies, earned university degrees here.
It's important to get the best students who will tomorrow will be in charge of their countries.
France may also profit from potential barriers to studying elsewhere, including tougher immigration restrictions in the United States and uncertainty over Brexit. The government plans to increase scholarships to offset tuition hikes for the neediest students. But in today's competitive environment, that may not be enough. A recent study by Campus France, which represents French education globally, found a sharp drop so far in African enrollment since a plan was announced.
It's not very a problem for Chinese students or Indian students or American students to pay more. It's a problem for African students to pay more.
Holo says the best and brightest students risk going elsewhere. Saudi Arabia and Turkey, for example, offer attractive scholarships. While aiming to attract more students from other parts of the world, UPEC wants to expand its presence in Africa as a way, UPEC's Tevene says, to contribute to the continent's development. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Côte, France.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, for some, the launch of a rocket into space to resupply the International Space Station is a routine mission. But for a group of students working with the Adler Planetarium in Chicago, it's a historic moment marking the achievement of a lifetime. VOA's Kane Farabaugh has more from Chicago.
19-year-old college student Fatima Guerra will be the first to admit she's into some really nerdy stuff.
Like, up there, nerdy.
Way up there, nerdy, in fact. All the way up into space. Guerra is an astronomer in training, involved since high school with a small project at the Adler Planetarium with big goals.
So our main goal was to see if the ozone layer is getting thinner and by how much, if there's like different parts of the Earth's atmosphere that's getting thinner because of the pollution.
A small electronic device called ThinSat gathers the data to shed light on these questions. Designed to orbit the Earth, the device was not developed by highly paid engineers, but by Chicago area students like Guerra.
We focused on coding the different parts of, like, sensors that the ThinSat is composed of. So we coded so that it can measure light intensity, pressure.
Yeah, this stuff is very nerdy.
Jesus Garcia is a systems engineer for the Adler Planetarium's Far Horizons project and oversees the work of the students developing ThinSat.
Many of the students who gain these opportunities are not typically from under-income or minority students. In fact, here at the Adler, we have students who are minorities, who have been faced with challenges of not having opportunities presented to them. And here we are presenting a mission where they are collaborating with us, scientists and engineers, to work on our very first mission that's going to space.
When NASA's Antares rocket, built by Northrop Grumman, blasted off from the coast of Virginia on April 17th, it wasn't just making a resupply mission to the International Space Station. On board was ThinSat, the culmination of work by many at the Adler, including Fatima Guerra, who joined the Far Horizons team as a high school requirement that became so much more.
The requirement can really become like a life-changing opportunity, and you don't even know it. It's really exciting to see that my work is going to go up into space and help in the scientific world.
It is also exciting for her parents, immigrants from Guatemala, who can proudly say their daughter helped build a satellite orbiting the Earth.
They are really excited, especially when I told them that it might become like a worldwide type of news and I'm going to be a part of it. They were really proud and they were calling my family over there and like, oh, she might be on TV. It's something that they feel really proud of me about for achieving.
Long after ThinSat's work is done, Guerra will still be known as a member of a team that put the first satellite developed by a private planetarium into space. She says her friends don't think that's nerdy at all. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Chicago, Illinois.
An upright piano that John Lennon used to write Beatles songs has been sold at auction. Jim Irsay, the owner of the National Football League team, the Indianapolis Colts, tweeted Saturday that he is elated to now own the instrument Lennon used to compose songs for the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album. The Indianapolis Star reports the piano made in the 1870s was auctioned on the site GottaHaveRockAndRoll.com. The site estimated it would sell for between $800,000 and $1.2 million U.S. dollars. As of Saturday afternoon, the final price tag had not yet been announced. Irsay calls ownership of the piano a responsibility he takes seriously with future generations in mind. The Star says Irsay previously bought guitars owned once by music legends Jerry Garcia, Prince, and Bob Dylan. Designed to enlighten me. When I turn again. And you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but we thank you so much for joining us. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day. I'm just sitting here watching the wheels go round and round. Lost in confusion. Well, I tell them there's no problem, only solutions. Well, they shake their heads and they look at me as if I've lost my mind. I told them there's no hurry, I'm just sitting here doing time.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa Show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC. right here on VOA Africa.
This is V.